Okay, good morning, everyone. So last week, we spoke about different aspects of machlokes, about disputes, and it didn't seem like machlokes was such a great thing. You know, maybe there was a concession to some kind of development that took place around the time of the students of Shammai and Hillel, that they weren't totally on target in terms of their approach to learning. But at the end, we mentioned the teaching of Reb Tzadok HaKohen, which was somehow a multiplicity of views is not a negative thing. And what's interesting is that if you go to page 1, you see this Mishnah Pirkei Avos, which some are probably familiar with. The Mishnah tells us, Kol machlokas shehi l'shem shamayim sofa l'hiskayim. Any machlokas which is for the sake of heaven, which is a separate, we could have a whole separate morning just to discuss what that means. Sofa l'hiskayim, ultimately its end will be to endure. V'she'ena l'shem shamayim, Parakei Mishnah Yitzayin, if it's not for the sake of heaven, ein sofa l'hiskayim, its end is not to remain. Eizehi machlokas shehi l'shem, third page, shehi l'shem shamayim, Zu machlokes Hillel v'Shammai. V'she'en l'shem shamayim Zu machlokes Korach v'chol adaso. So the machlokes of Hillel and Shammai, which we saw last time, was very limited. There were four machlokes, and according to Yerushalmi, four machlokes in between Shammai and Hillel. But that machlokes is so full of hiskayim, is going to endure. So that's interesting. If I understood that disputes were a concession, and that they weren't something we're going to look forward to, so why would it be miskayim? Right? Why is the Mishnah telling you, oh, that machlokas is sofa l'hiskayim? I would have said a different term. If you're trying to compare and contrast people who are properly motivated versus people who are not properly motivated, I would have said, you know, this is a machlok, the machlokas l'shem shamayim is going to have a kiyum of the fulfillment of Talmud Torah, or it brings you closer to Hashem, or some other expression. What does it mean? Sofa l'hiskayim means it will remain. But I thought we don't want the machlokas to remain. Well, evidently, machlokas ain't all bad. If it's going to remain, right, why would you want it to remain? The word lehiskayim sounds like there is some standing power.
Standing power doesn't necessarily mean that it's good. I mean, it does seem...
Well, it's a machlokas l'shem shamayim. This and Hillel and Shammai, these are, you know, right, that's a good thing. You would think that it's these are great people, and it's lehiskayim, it's great.
But it doesn't mean that either one of them is wrong.
Okay, we're going to have to get... Good.
It's very valuable.
That's exactly what we're talking about today. So let's try to develop that a little bit. So the question is, well, what value do you find in machlokas? So let's go to page number 3. I think you can look at it... You can look at it first on a narrow, almost utilitarian standpoint of why there is a benefit to machlokas. So this is the Nesivos. The Nesivos was Rav Yaakov Loberbaum. He was one of the great giants of the 19th century of halachic learning. He was around the same period of time as Rabbi Akiva Eiger, a little bit later than the Ketzos HaChoshen. These are some of the most significant figures in the world of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch over the last 300 years. So the Nesivos, he lived in a small town called Lisa, was the name of his city. And he wrote several commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, including this one, which is called Nesivos HaMishpat. And in the introduction of the Nesivos HaMishpat, which is one of his commentaries on the section of Choshen Mishpat, he describes what he thinks is a big pick-me-up of machlokas. An interesting idea. He says, what happens when you discuss an issue with someone else? This is my terms, but we'll see it inside in a little bit. What happens when you have a perspective and you present it to someone else and you hear their perspective? Or you ask a question and you discuss it with somebody else, especially somebody else who doesn't agree with you. So what is the outgrowth of that process?
Broadening,
but also greater clarity of your own position. Even if that person is totally wrong. But when you engage in a discussion with someone, by definition, you dig deeper into what you thought before. You analyze it greater. So he quotes an interesting Talmudic expression. If you go down, it's not the easiest thing. I didn't have an easier edition to copy for you. If you go to the 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth line from the bottom, Dali chasp ilav ulay de dali la chaspa lo mishkachas marganisa to say. The Gemara has an expression. If I didn't pick up the chaspa, the cheres, the earthenware, you wouldn't have found the jewel underneath it. That's the expression. It's a Talmudic expression, but he's applying it in this context. I'm having a dispute with somebody. We're having a machlokas of what this halacha means. I might be totally wrong, but by presenting my view, the other person, my interlocutor, has to now think about why I'm wrong. And he may uncover a greater insight into this halacha because he's challenged by my opinion, even though it's wrong. So the most basic usefulness of machlokas is that it actually sometimes brings forth greater clarity, better access to an understanding. Because you have to go through the process, even if that person, the other view, is completely wrong. And that's what the Nesivos is arguing here in his Akdam, which is interesting. He's saying, look, I can't tell you that I'm 100% right. I'm going to do the best that I can, which is amazing from a man who is a giant of Torah. He says, but look, even if what I'm going to write here, or even if what somebody came before me said was wrong, it's still valuable. Because through this process of learning and analyzing what it's going to say in the Shulchan Aruch, we'll come to a better understanding. So that's one important contribution. Here's another contribution. Just basic machlokas, why is it valuable? On a spiritual level, if you look on page 4, you have a piece of a tshuva, the end of the Shilas and Tshuvas Eretz Tzvi, Simen Gimel. Who was the Shilas and Tshuvas Eretz Tzvi? This was Rav Aryeh Leib Fromer. Rav Aryeh Leib Fromer was one of the final Rosh Yeshivas in the Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin. He was also the Rav in a small town called Kozhaglov. So he was known as the Kozhaglov Rav, Rav Aryeh Leib Fromer, and he was also one of the great Chachamim of the Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin with many students. He was killed by the Nazis. Oh, here's a good Mar Mokum. I don't know who it was, but there's somebody in his family, in the Fromer family, who dedicated the fifth floor of the YU library, the Mendel Gottesman Library. So when you go out the door, if you ever go visit YU, and you go to the fifth floor of the library, which is where a lot of the Svarim are, which is probably why they donated that, if you go out the door to the right, you'll see a framed picture of the Kozhaglov, Rav Aryeh Leib Fromer. So he was from the great Rosh Yeshiva of Chach Lublin and Chassidischer Yid. So he has a lot of kind of lomdus, but also explaining Hasidic minhagim and perspectives, a lot of Hasidic Torah. I found when I was searching for this tshuva that I found reference, when I was searching for this tshuva, I came across one of his disciples, Talmud Chaverim in Lublin, wrote up his Chidushei Torah on the Parsha, which I did not know that they existed. So anyway, so the Kozhaglover has a tshuva where he has, and because of his Hasidic bent, he kind of sprinkles this perspective throughout his responses. He's dealing with a halachic issue here. But by the by, if you see on the bottom, I put the little arrow, he says, wait a minute. He says, we know, he quotes from the Zohar HaKadosh, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God created the world by looking in the Torah. And he says, therefore, v'Yisrael mishtadli, three lines before my arrow, mishtadli ba'oraisa umakal me'alma. When we learn Torah, we establish the world. Right now, here on Sunday morning in Skokie, Illinois, we are keeping the world going by speaking words of Torah that the Rebbeinu Shalom gave us. So he says, u'b'makom shi'esh plugto, whenever you have a machlokas at the arrow, Kevan de elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, which is going to be the main focus of our discussion. These and these are the words of the living God. The Gemara that we saw last week in Erev and Daf Yigimel. Hare kol shita v'shita, each opinion, chelek mikiyum ha'olam. They're part of keeping the world going. It's part of the Torah world, which is keeping the world going. And therefore, the more we can explain and develop these different opinions, it's not a waste of time. On a spiritual level, these different opinions are contributing to the spiritual sustenance of our world. That's a second point. You could argue a third point. In addition to the fact that machlokas is good because it sharpens your position, it sharpens your understanding, in addition to the fact that it adds to the spiritual sustenance, the strength of our world, but also you could point out that there is a fuller expression of Talmud Torah. There is a kiyum of Talmud Torah, fulfillment in studying Torah, that is given to you by these increased perspectives. Rav Kook has a comment in, I think it's in Brachos, in the Ein Haya, where, you know, we say, Talmidei Chachamim marbim shalom ba'olam. I don't know, have you ever met two rabbis who created more peace in the world? No, it's usually more opinions. So Rav Kook explains that shalom doesn't mean lack of disagreement. Shalom means the wholeness of perspective. So when you have multiple opinions, you have different vantage points, and you get a fuller perspective on what you're dealing with. And that too, you could argue, that's really a kiyum of Talmud Torah. Nobody would say that, and I think I heard this from Rav Shechter, but I went to look it up in the book on Torah Shebaal Peh. I did not find it, but I must have heard it from him in Baal Peh. Nobody would say that studying the opinions of Beis Shammai, which we don't accept today, that's not Bittul Torah. That's a kiyum of Talmud Torah, because that's also a Chefetz Shel Torah. So the more that there is a machlokas, that's, on the one hand, that's not great because we have more difficulty coming to the resolution, halacha l'maisa, but it gives us more of an opportunity to fill out our picture and fulfill Talmud Torah in maybe a broader ability than we would have had before. So these are general models of why machlokas may be a good thing. But the question is, what do we do about, you know, the opinions that just contradict each other? How do you deal with multiple opinions? Isn't it true that there's only one Torah given by one God? So here, we began last week, we mentioned two key Gemaras that we want to go back to now. One was the Gemara in Chagiga, that even though it was Nitnu Meroa Echad, it was given from one shepherd, but there are multiple layers. There are multiple perspectives Latame and multiple perspectives Latahir. Multiple perspectives to say that it's prohibited and multiple perspectives to say that it's permitted. This idea is expressed in a different way in a beautiful mashal on page 5, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Devei Rabbi Yishmael Tana at the arrow, Ukefatish Yefotzeitz Sela, it is like a hammer that smashes a rock. Ma patish ze mischalek lekama nitzotzos, af mikra echad yotze lekama tamim. Just like this hammer, when it smashes the rock, it splinters into many pieces, fragments, so too, one verse in the Torah can splinter into many meanings. And that doesn't mean that one is to the exclusion of another. These are multiple layers of interpretation. Sometimes the Gemara has an expression, "Ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto." You, except for one or two exceptions, which need to be analyzed, not for today. you always follow the primary intent of what the Torah is there for. But that doesn't mean that there aren't many, many different layers. So when you study and you find, you know, one opinion that says one thing and then another opinion that says something else, that doesn't necessarily mean that they are mutually exclusive. Especially in the world of Parshanut, especially in the world of Machshava, and especially in the world of understanding Psukim. Because there, you can have multiple layers. You have Pshat, Drash, right? Homily, exegesis, however you're going to look at Drash, Remez, hints, Sod, the secrets of Torah. There are different layers. So that is much easier to handle in the world of Machshava. Shivim Panim LaTorah, there are 70 facets of Torah. Well, wait a minute, I don't really understand. How does that work in the world of Halacha? It's nice that the Gemara told me in Erevin, Eileve Eile Divrei Elokim Chaim, these and these are the words of the living God, but how could it be? Either it's kosher, or it's not kosher. How could two people be the words of the living God if you say that something is tame and someone else, another opinion says that it's tar? How could it be both? How could we both be the opinion of the living God? And this, as we mentioned, that Gemara and Chagigah, you know, it causes us to struggle with how do we understand the whole halachic process? Because how could two people be so diametrically opposed? How could they both have validity? So the first place to think about this, which is important ha'ara, is on page 6 in the Aruch HaShulchan's introduction to Choshen Mishpat. He says, look, in paragraph V'chi, V'chi yipali be'enecho al rov ha'deos, it's wonder in your eye of the many opinions, umachlekusam, and their arguments, v'firtei hadinim. You start shaking your head. So many machloksin? So many opinions? I don't understand it. He says, I don't get it. This is Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein of Nevaradok. So he's writing a little over 100 years ago, maybe 150. He says, there are tons of them. And then he invokes our Gemara and Chagiga, that the student comes and he says, I don't understand this opinion like this, this opinion like that. So he makes one introductory note, which I think is really important. He says, the first thing you have to understand is that these arguments that we see in the world of learning, that we feel them on a day-to-day basis, you know, when someone calls the rabbi and gets one answer, and then someone else calls the rabbi and gets a different answer. He says, you have to remember a crucial point, that these are arguments in the details. And you know what? Sometimes we get caught up in the weeds. We don't think about that. He says, wait, just realize, these are not arguments on the basics. These are arguments on the minutia. He says, next paragraph, Hashamata miyamecha, have you ever heard in your days, Shiyeh ben Chachmei Yisrael, that the great sages would argue, Haholchem b'derech ha-Talmud machlokas bi'ikari malachas Shabbos v'yomtov? Has anybody had a fundamental argument about the malachas of Shabbos? You will find an argument about whether or not taking the tea bag and holding it over the cup is borer or is not borer, but nobody ever argued about borer. So sometimes we don't think about it. He says, first thing is, don't get carried away. Take a step back. If you had to explain Judaism to somebody who was not yet understanding, you wouldn't have a lot of machloksin. You would tell everybody. Everybody agrees there's Shabbos. Everybody agrees when Shabbos is. Everybody agrees what Shabbos means. Everybody agrees how many malachas there are on Shabbos. Nobody disputes the major issues. He says, where do you get the machloksin? On the small issues. On the fine points. Not on the major points. So that's an important introduction. Because sometimes we feel like everything's an argument. The truth is, when you take a step back, not everything is an argument. Most things are not an argument. The big things are not an argument. Then he goes on the next page, on page 7. And he says, he starts to give you an introduction to an idea that we're going to develop, but he says it in such a poetic, a beautiful idea. He says in paragraph V'chol, V'chol machlokas ha-tanaim v'amoraim, all of the arguments of the tanaim and the amoraim, v'ha-gaonim, and the great giants of the gaonim, and the poskim, and these are the rabbinic arbiters, be'emes l'mevin dar v'la'ashro divrei Elokim chayim hema, like we said in the Gemara in Erevin, ulekulam, and all of them, yesh panim ba'halacha, there is a face in halacha, which we'll talk about in a minute, v'adaraba, Zosi tiferes Torah seinu hakadosha v'haTorah. This is the beauty, the glory of our Torah. What's that? V'kol haTorah kula nikreis shira. The whole Torah is called a shira. What's a shira? That's right. V'tiferes hashir, and the beauty of a song, he, kishakolos mishunim zemizeh, when you have different voices. V'ikar, v'zeu ikar ha-ne'imus, and that is the main beauty Umi shemeshotet b'yam ha-talmud yira ni'imus mishunos b'chol ha-kolos ha-mishunos zemizeh. The more you immerse yourself in the sea of Talmud, you will hear those beautiful voices complimenting each other. Right? You ever go, anybody have a chance to go to the CSO? Beautiful, right? They all play different instruments that have different voices and different sounds, but when you bring them all together, when you have that harmonious blend, it's magisterial. It's like magic. When you have a sefer that brings together the opinions, or you have a shtickel Torah, or you have someone who says a shir, and he takes all the different opinions and the questions and the answer, and he puts it all together, you walk out and you're like, it's like music. It's amazing. So he says, when you're looking at these machloks, and number one, it's not all bad. Number one, the main machloksim are in the details, not in the major things. And number two, even the machloksim, the multiple perspectives, they have a shira. The only thing is, he still hasn't addressed, well, how could it be that they're both divrei Elokim chayim if they contradict each other? But the idea that different voices create a symphony is a beautiful mashal. It's a great mashal for how to learn Torah. Yeah. Yes.
And everybody's yelling at each other.
Yes.
That's an example of.
Sounds good, right? Yeah.
And it doesn't mean they're all disagreeing.
But they are all disagreeing. That's part of the. That's exactly.
But then you have to share.
Right, and then maybe it comes together. Okay, so now let's get to the heart of it, because we still haven't explained. You know, it's very nice the machlokas is useful, and that it's this choral ensemble. It's all very nice and good, but Maisa, how do you resolve these contradictions? Beis Hillel Beis Shammai, Eilu Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim. How? According to the standards of Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel can't marry these women in Yavamas, and according to the Beis, vice versa. And how do they resolve it? How does it conceptually? How does it resolve? So you start with the Ritva. Now, I don't want to get in trouble with this statement after 120 years because people will be very angry at me. But it is true. I haven't learned that much, but I have a particular affinity for the Ritva. Now, the Ramban, after 120 years, is probably going to be like, oh, he's such a jerk. But I'll explain to him that I didn't really understand the full. It's much harder for me. The Ritva, this is like music. When you read the Ritva, he's able to synthesize, because he was a student of the Rashba, so he has the Bali HaTosfos tradition and the Spanish tradition, and he's very, at least for me, he's very clear to understand. So, I don't want to say that he's my favorite Rishon, because you're not supposed to pick favorites, but I'm just saying. So the Ritva, that's Rabbi Yom Tov al-Savili, means he was from. There you go. Okay, so Rabbeinu Yom Tov, the Ritva, Rabbeinu Yom Tov al-Savili says, Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim, in his pirish on the Gemara in Erevin, this core Gemara. Shalu rabus rabbonei Tzorfas. What is Tzorfas? That's right. Who? What does that mean? Who is he referring to? The Tosafists. Remember, he's writing in the end of the 14th century. He already has the tradition of the 13th century from the French Bali HaTosfos. He says, we heard that way up there in France, they had a question. I got it now in Spain. I heard it from the French school, from the Tosfos. Heich efshar, zichronam levracha. Heich efshar, how is it possible, shiushneim divrei Elokim chayim, that they could both be the word of the living God? Ze oser v'ze matir. This one prohibits, and this one permits. I don't get it. Says the Ritva, this is how it is. Vitirtzu, they answered. Ki kisha'ala Moshe lamarim. When Moshe Rabbeinu went up on high, lekabel Torah, to receive the Torah, heru lo al kol davar v'davar. They showed him on every issue, memtes, 49 panim, faces, le'iser, umemtes panim, leheter. Every issue has within it multiple perspectives. And those multiple perspectives, like the Gemara said in Chagigas, nitnu me roa echa, they were given to us by God with the multiple perspectives. And Moshe Rabbeinu asked God, he says, can you explain this to me? How can you have one issue that has 49 negative perspectives and 49 affirmative perspectives? Which is it? Is it negative or affirmative? And he said, that this should be given over to the sages of the Jewish people in every generation, and the arbitration, the ruling, will be done by the sages in this world. That is correct according to the drash, and there's also a Kabbalistic understanding, which maybe we'll allude to later. So what is the Ritva saying? He's saying built in to every question, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us two different perspectives. So when Beis Hillel says one thing, and Beis Shammai says another thing, both perspectives really are Divrei Elokim Chayim. It's not that one is right and one is wrong. It's built in. That's the way that it was given in the first place. And if you look in the Drashas Haran, which when...
leaves us feeling like we're insufficient and we've only seen that in a few.
What's that?
I'm just kidding, like... we've only seen it in a few. We only have this kind of it with a few as opposed to everyone.
Well, because initially, like we said last week, initially they had the common system of analyzing it. So they were looking at the different perspectives with the same set of assumptions and ways of looking at it. So they always came out with the same result on one side. So take a look in the Drash Saran. He says the same thing. Page 9. Rabbi Nunisim ben Ruvain of Girondi, also Spanish late Rishon, he says on the bottom of the right-hand column, Eich nomar, how is it possible, Shekulam nemru l'moshem b'pi agvura? I don't understand. He quotes that same Gemara in Chagiga. How is it possible? So he goes over to the top left column, Umiika sveka klape shmaya, kame shmaya, is there a doubt in front of God? God can't be unsure, either it is or it isn't. God can't have two opinions. Aval ha'inyan, he says, Al derech shekasavnu, shehashem yizbarach mosar hachros eila lachach mehador. That God gave these decisions to the sages of the generations. Which brings us to another topic that we're not going to talk about today, but is a worthy topic, which is what we say, lo bashamayim hi. The Torah is not held by God. It's given to the Chachmei HaMesorah. Which is why you have an issue, and we mentioned this a while ago from the opinion of the Rambam, you have an issue that needs clarification. In one generation, the Bezdin HaGadol, the 71 members, the court, they say, we're going to rule on this question in one direction. And then they reassess the same issue two generations later, and they come up with a different ruling. So, Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim Chayim. Why? Because now it makes sense. When they analyzed it the first time around, they looked at all the perspectives in both directions, and based on the perspective that they had at that time, they thought that one direction, let's say the Isser, would outweigh the Heter. But that doesn't invalidate the fact that the minority opinion, the other factors, are still there. And what happens in the later generations, they come and they give greater weight to this, let's say, permissive opinion, and then they outvote the other opinion. So it's a question of levers. It's not a question of binary yes or no. It's not that the later opinion comes and says, oh, the previous opinion, that's not valid. It was valid at that time, because Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim Chayim. There are, each side, you can look at that, and that's why this is a very interesting Gemara. Look at this Gemara on page 10. If you're going to be on the Sanhedrin, look at your qualification. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Ein Moshivin B'Sanhedrin. Last line in the Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. You don't appoint somebody to the Sanhedrin. Ela mi sheyodea l'sheret l'tayr es hasheretz min haTorah. Only somebody who knows how to be metayr, to purify a sheretz from the Torah. Can you explain that to me? It says in the Chumash that the sheretz is tamei. So Tosfos says here, Look on the top left, Sheyodea. The Koshal Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says, Ma lanu b'charifus shel hevel. What do you need somebody doing silly mental gymnastics for? What's going on? I don't understand. So the answer is, based on what we're saying, and the Tosas kind of alludes to it, they come up with a particular point, is that, wait a second, even the Sheretz, when God gave us the Sheretz at Sinai, He said, the halacha is that it's Tameh, but you should know, within that understanding of the world of Sheretz that's Tameh, there are also perspectives that are Tahor. So you're only going to send somebody to the Sanhedrin if they have such insight into the Torah that they can see all the different perspectives. They have to be able to see how every halacha has multiple perspectives, because each one does. So in this member of the Sanhedrin, they may vote that something is Tameh, but they know that they need to address the issues, the perspectives that are Tahor. They're thinking about it from both. It's not like the Rabbeinu Tam says, a guy who's really super bright that he could do mental gymnastics. It's not mental gymnastics. It's that he can look within the halacha and say, oh, you know, well, he's talking about maybe there's a Tumas Nevela. Maybe there's Tumas Sheretz, but the Tumas Nevela doesn't apply. He's able to get into the details and see the different perspectives. And in this way, it really is possible, Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim Chaim. It doesn't mean, Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim Chaim means that we follow both opinions, but it means that both opinions have validity. And that's why in one generation you may follow one opinion, and in a later generation you'll follow a different opinion. But even contradictory opinions can have validity, because it's a question of weighing and balancing. And this idea, I think, has a couple of nuances that we can develop. The first is in this Maharal. There is a lot written on Eilu ve'Eilu, and I'm not presenting here a comprehensive perspective. There are many articles. I was using a couple in particular. Rabbi Rosenzweig, Rabbi Michael Rosenzweig, one of the Rosh Yeshiva, my Rabbeim in YU, has an article in Tradition, probably over 15 years ago now, maybe 20 years ago, that I read a few times on Eilu ve'Eilu. Dr. Moshe Sokolov has on Eilu ve'Eilu. I could send them around if people are interested. So this, the Maharal here is a very interesting observation, a similar idea with a Maharal, Rabbi Yehuda Lo. You're talking about one of the great, 500 years ago, the great, 400 or 500 years ago, the great Jewish thinker. So he puts it in philosophical terms or metaphysical terms. He says, Ki Hashem Yisbarach, this is in the first Ber Hagola, in his book, in the first chapter, Ber Hagola, Hashem Yisbarach Kasher Nasan Torah LeYisrael, when he gave the Torah to the Jewish people, Nasan kol davar v'davar b'torah kafi mashehu. He gave every item as it is. Va'amar, and he said, Shedin ze yesh bo bechina lizchus. There is an aspect which is for acquittal. V'yesh bo bechina lechov, and there is an aspect for conviction. V'din shel iser v'heter. It's something that's prohibited and permitted. Yesh bedin ze bechina leheter. There is an aspect for permission. V'yeshkan b'china le'eser, and there's restriction. V'chein kasher and pasul. And he gives you a very interesting mashal. Go three lines down from the arrow, five lines down from the arrow, where the dot is. K'mo sheba'olam nimtza davar murkav mehapachim. You have things that are actually comprised of competing issues. First word on the line is mehapachim. V'tucha lomar al ha'etz. You could talk about a tree. Shehu misyaches el yisod hamayim. Would you say that a tree is a liquid? Well, in a certain sense, a tree is a liquid, because the life of the tree actually is sustained by the moisture that runs through the tree that's channeled to the leaves. If the tree didn't have liquid in it, it would die. So there is an aspect of the tree which is liquid. And he says, V'cheinim hu ha'emes sheyesh bo min ha'mayim. And there is a liquid quality to it. V'tucha lomar sheyesh bo min yisod ha'avir. And you could also say that it has avir. What does that mean, avir? It has air, meaning it has oxygen. It has light. It uses photosynthesis. And further, V'lo timtza davar pasha lagamri. You won't find anything simple. So if somebody said to you, well, a tree is a solid. you would say yes. If somebody said to you, a tree is a liquid, you would say yes. Well, how could it be both a solid and a liquid? The answer is, it has different components. And those components, when you create categories that are mutually exclusive, it doesn't work. You can't say a tree is only a liquid. Obviously, it's not only a liquid. You can't say it's only a solid. It's not just a block of cement. So there are elements of both, and that's what the Maharal is saying you find in Machlokas. There is an aspect of truth. You're looking at it from different vantage points. This idea, and I'm not saying they're all saying the same thing. I think you can maybe draw some distinctions and nuance, but it's the same principle. If you look on page 12, Rav Dessler, Rav Elio Dessler, was a great rabbinic leader in England, and look where he wrote this letter. Yom Aleph, first day of Parshas Noach, Tovshin Tes, 1949. No, actually, this is in Parshas Noach, so it's going to still be... 1949. No, it's still 1948, I think. Besfina Baderech La America. He's on the boat on his way to America, and he's responding to letters that he collected. So he describes how before he left England, he got a bunch of letters, and now he has time on the ship to write. And he says, what's the pshat in Eilu ve'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim? He gives you another mashal, down where the arrow is. Shtei Adeot, these two opinions, Shnei Mabatim Emes u'Shneim Emes. They're both true. How so? If you take, Im L'mashal, Im Nikach Gilyon Shel Niyar, let me take a piece of paper like this. Ve'ha'echad Yirenu, Ach Mitzad, of yo, only you see it from the thickness, you only saw the piece of paper from your, let's say you're looking at it from there, you only see it like this. So if you see the paper only from that perspective, says Rav Dessler, the tzad hashitchi and the surface area nistar mimenu, you don't see it. Vat sheni, and somebody else looks at it, ach mitzad hashitchi, they only see it from this side, they don't see the depth. So what happens? Halo tifrutz machlukas beinayim. They're going to start arguing. I'll ask you, how big is this paper? You'll say, well, it's very thin. And the other person will say, what are you talking about? It's huge, it's very thick. So the answer is, says Rav Dessler, they're both echu be'emes shneim ro'en oso ha'gilyon atzmo ach mishnei b'mabatim. They're both looking at the same thing, but from different perspectives. So that's how it's possible that you can have two perspectives in halacha that draw on the same shoresh. And you can take it one level deeper, perhaps, maybe you call this Kabbalah. The Alter Rebbe in the Hakdama, in the Likud Hakdama to the Tanya, it describes there that, you know, every neshama has a different spiritual makeup in the world. And so therefore it's going to make sense that different people's neshamas, when they stood at Har Sinai, they connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the shorish of all these neshamas, in different ways. So look at this line in a halachic context by Rav Shlomo Luria, the author of the Yamshul Shlomo, very important commentary on the Talmud from about 400 years ago. Okay, maybe it's not the easiest commentary to read based on the photocopy you have in front of you, but I'll read it for you in the underline. He says, you know what happened when people stood at Sinai? Kol echad ra'a derech tzinor shelo lefi hasagaso. Everyone saw at Har Sinai according to the channel, the spiritual channel that they connected to. What does that mean? So in the previous line, he says, wait a minute, there were memtes sinoros, where the arrow is, vein shiva pa'amim shiva mezukak shiva sayim. At Sinai, you could imagine, like those, you ever see those kiddush cups where you pour into the thing and they have the spouts? It's like they had, right, you've seen those kiddush cups? Imagine HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribbono Shel Olam, was pouring Or Ein Sof, the light of the Torah, into an enormous kiddush cup at Har Sinai. And there were 49 different sinoros, 49 different channels to receive that spiritual energy, that Torah, that light, the Or. So he says, the 49 channels represent 49 different perspectives and different spiritual dimensions of the Shoresh. It's all the same grape juice. It's all the same Kiddush. It's just where you're going to receive it, it might look different to you. It might seem different to you. So you're going to look at it in a very specific way because it's going to resonate with you because you received it through the Tzinor, through the spiritual channel, which is unique to you. So all the different people at Sinai, they all had an experience of relation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Echad, and for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there is no Machlokas. Shmo Echad is the same as Hu Echad. But for us, because we have different makeups, spiritual makeups, we connect to different Tzinoros. So he says that's how it came about that there are different machloksim. Kula nitnu miroa echad. They were all given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by the one God. But because there are different spiritual energies in the world and different people connect to them, so they're going to connect to them differently. So what we see at the end of the day is that Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim, while it does not mean that everybody does what they want and it's a free-for-all, that's not what it means. You have to follow very specific rules. Maybe we'll take a whole morning to talk about that. If everybody's Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim, so how do you know what to do? So the simple answer to that is that the Sanhedrin is going to answer that question. They're going to resolve, like we said last time, the Sanhedrin is going to have to answer all the ambiguities and solve all the questions. So even though it does not mean that it's a free-for-all, but what it does mean is that the Torah is multifaceted. So you'll have the same issue that has, like the Ritva said, 49 different perspectives, and different people are going to weigh that in different ways. And now we can understand how last week's Ha'ara from the Rambam fits very well. Because initially, everybody, they didn't have machlokas, because everybody looked at it and said, oh, I see these 49 perspectives and those 49 perspectives, but because we have the same methodology, we're going to come up with the same calculus. We're going to say, this is going to be the predominant view, and this is going to be the rejected view. But once that calculus started to shift, and people saw it with different perspectives, so then you're going to see the recalibration. Some people are going to say, oh no, I think that the other opinion is going to carry greater weight in this circumstance, and vice versa. So each one has validity because both of them come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, come from Sinai. And that's even true, perhaps, on a mystical level, as we're seeing at the end. So in addition to the pragmatic aspects of machlokas that are great, because it helps us arrive at greater clarity and truth, and there's lahagdol Torah v'adira, lahadira, and there's kiyum of the olam through the experience of Talmud Torah, but it's also part of our neshama. And that's what we need to come back to. And what we explore as we grow in our world of learning is that different people, our neshamas, the more we get excited about learning, we connect to different areas, and that's not something that we should resist, it's something we should celebrate. We're all going to learn all of Torah. That's going to be our lifetime mission. That's why we're here this morning, to continue to our quest of learning. But as we go through it, you see from the Maharshal that maybe your neshama at Sinai, it was more connected to a particular approach to learning, or as some Chassidish Sfarim would say, maybe your neshama is noted toward a different style, like a different aspect, a Chassidish aspect. Maybe it's more chesed, some people are more gvur, more din, but it becomes a part of us. The learning becomes a part of us, and we realize that our neshama is really a part of it, and that tzinor continues even until this day. Sure.